So here it comes. After 51 years without one, two World Cups in 4 months. England are the under 17 World Cup winners.
Welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFillon.
Hello.
No scary names. We should have come up with some interesting play on words on our names.
People do that on Twitter, don't they? They change their names for the month of October to something, some kind of scary variation.
For the month of October.
Well, not everyone, obviously, but no. I mean, a significant number of people that I follow seem to just change their name to something. Like, I follow Will Wheaton, who was an actor, and he changed his name to Will Screamton.
It's a bit lame, though, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I suppose it's meant to be.
He's a former child star, so you know.
No, he is a self-made man, though. You know, he's fine. You're right. He is a former child star, but he's achieved many other great things since he was a former child star. Sadly, however, almost everybody only remembers him for being a former star. That's certainly why I follow him.
He was in Stand By Me, but he was a lot of people know him because he was in Star Trek Next Generation.
He was Wesley. Right. Mm. Yeah. Okay. I know. Yeah.
So we haven't come up with scary names because this is our Halloween episode, and we haven't even put up any decorations. I haven't even carved the pumpkin. But our celebrations really are because it's Terry's birthday today, isn't it?
It is.
Happy birthday, Terry.
Thank you, mate. Yes.
Having your birthday during the football season, so that must be brilliant, isn't it? Because it's yours, next month, isn't it?
Yes, end of November.
End of November as well. See, mine's June, and mine sort of comes in the middle of summer tournaments, which is bad news. I've mentioned this on the podcast before because I think England have gone out twice on my birthday.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I was checking the calendar just the other day, and I think it's group stage matches on my birthday in Russia. So if England get into Group H, then they're definitely playing on my birthday next year. Ooh. If they get into Group H. Yeah.
Hmm.
So 1 in 8 chance.
What are the chances, eh?
Well, 1 in 8, I suppose.
Yes. Well, I didn't realise you were going to say that before I engaged my brain to say that.
But hey, of talking of World Cups, you wait 50 years for a World Cup, very patiently, and then two come along pretty much at once. Because on Saturday, international listeners, you may not have heard this as much as we've heard it over the last few days. England are the world champions at under 17 level.
Yes.
But we're also the world champions at under 20 level.
Yeah, two World Cups. At underage level.
Yes. But but two World Cups.
At underage level.
Yes. We are the only team, with only Brazil have won two World Cups at the same time. At underage level. And that was in 2003, when most of the guys who won the cup just the other day were toddlers.
Yeah. It's depressing, isn't it?
That's mad.
That is mad. They were all frighteningly young, those guys. In that squad. I think nearly all of them were born after the millennium.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, you saw that diet of avocados they have. It's made them,
Do you think that's it?
Yeah.
Well, do you think it's superfoods that are to blame for this?
I think that's what it is. Yeah. It must. Well, blame is an interesting way of putting it. obviously, it's surely a good thing, and therefore they can be held responsible.
So you think fatty fruits are the secret of our success now?
Well, yeah, that and the inability to buy their own property, clearly.
So they're all just like loading up on blueberries and quinoa.
Indeed, yeah, again, quinoa indeed. And it's having its effect. It certainly can't be anything the FA's doing.
Well, we did have a whole half hour of poking a stick at the FA last week, didn't we?
Yeah.
And they've got to be able to get some bit of reflected glory from this. The underage teams have done very, very well this summer.
And they are coached by FA coaches.
Yes. and St George's Park, that lovely place that all the journalists hate going to, obviously must be doing something good.
Yeah, well, they train the coaches. They don't train the players so much, do they?
No.
But they do train the coaches, and I would imagine that we have more coaches now because of St George's Park than we had to. And maybe that's having an effect. And, yeah, they all belong to their own respective clubs, although they're not employed by them. So the club, so it is a genuine victory for English football.
Yeah, and the way they played was amazing. I mean, I watched quite a bit of the tournament, and I watched the final, even though it was at the same time as the 3 o'clock kickoffs on Saturday. Yeah, the world didn't collapse in on itself.
No.
Because I was watching football.
On a Saturday at 3 o'clock in the
morning. On the telly, yeah. Through a legitimate feed.
Yeah.
And it was on two channels as well at once.
Yeah, because they showed it on the BBC.
I watched it on Yo-Yo Sport. Of course. Because I'd watched the rest of the tournament on Yo-Yo Sport.
So yeah, and also, we're disciples of Tim Capel here at the Sound of Football Podcast.
We are
indeed. Yeah. He is among the finest football commentators there is.
He certainly is.
And I'm not saying that with any irony whatsoever. It's a fact.
Yeah.
But he'll end up going up to the BBC or ITV or Sky, and he'll become rubbish, because that's what happens to all of them when they go up.
That is
they
true.
They become rubbish. But, you know, at the moment, you know, he's good.
I think I know why we like him, because he also commentates on the biathlon as well. Doesn't he?
Does he really?
Yeah, he does.
Is that him, is it?
He does a bit of biathlon as well. Commentary.
Well,
yeah.
Oh, well, in that case, yes, yeah. Estimation's risen.
Yeah.
Risen.
And we're going to get a biathlon game on again soon.
Biathlon's coming out soon. If we keep watching enough biathlon, we'll be able to start recording podcasts about
We will definitely have to have at least one spin-off one. Yeah. And it's calling out for it. I think there is a need out there.
I don't even know what two sports is in a biathlon.
Oh my God!
Heresy!
Well, no, it's not heresy. It's really good.
You sound like you need to listen to a biathlon podcast.
It's cross-country skiing and shooting.
And shooting. Oh, right, yes.
Yeah, so they go around skis with a rifle strapped to their back.
Yeah,
going through the woods, through, and then they come down to this little area, the shooting area, where they fire off five targets.
And
if you miss one, then you have to hang around in the penalty area.
Yeah, do a penalty loop.
And then you carry on. So it's like a time delay.
So it's like a time, yeah.
Do you know, I know that now. I remember that from some 1980s computer game.
Oh, really?
It's like, it wasn't Daley Thompson's decathlon, obviously, unless he did a biathlon in the middle of a decathlon.
Daley Thompson's biathlon.
It must have been, yeah. But I seem to remember you had to do something to keep the heart rate down while you were trying to shoot, rather than concentrating and trying to shoot.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's the name of the game.
That sounds like an Amiga game.
It might have been. I did have an Amiga. I think it was before that. It might have been a Commodore 64 game. I think it was a 64 game.
Yeah, cause it's all about keeping the heart rate down while you're shooting.
Yes.
Because, needless to say, your heart rate's going to be very high because of all of that. Oh, it's the ultimate James Bond sport.
Oh, yeah.
If you like your James Bond, then you will like biathlon, because it is. Yeah. And there are other reasons why it's good as well. More aesthetic. But we won't go into that, because we're a family podcast.
We are indeed. Now, obviously, with the success comes immediate misgivings in the press. What would you say has been the reception of us winning a World Cup?
Well, the first thing I heard on BBC Radio 5 Live this morning was, isn't it great we've won the World Cup at underage level, but is this ever going to be replicated at senior level, because most of the players play for Chelsea and they've got to be given a chance? And that was how they were playing it out this morning.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, hang about, these lads have just won the World Cup at underage level. We should be really shouting about it. And they were just talking about how it was going to fall on its arse.
Yeah.
So that's my experience of it was yours, just saying.
Yeah, I mean, we should be celebrating the fact that we've won the World Cup at under 17 level. Because, you know, it's a fantastic achievement. Yeah. I mean, and maybe just put to one side the concerns of the fact that, you know, we won't necessarily replicate that at senior level, even with this crop of players, because winning World Cups is hard anyway. Now, there's certainly concerns about whether or not these lads will make it through into the first teams of their respective clubs, or indeed other clubs. And they are legitimate concerns, but I do think it cheapens it somewhat to just simply look at these lads' achievements and then just think about the bigger picture. I think it behooves us all to reflect just for a few moments on just how well they've done, talk about the players, what they've done. I'm not saying that we're going to do that now, but, you know, just perhaps newspapers and broadcasters allowed their viewers, their listeners, their readers to just simply enjoy the moment because, you know, we've won a World Cup at under 17 level. And it's a big deal.
I have to say, though, before they'd won it, when they were actually playing it, I was driving around in the countryside in my car at the time, and all of the other games were being commentated on, and the coverage was going between the games. And as that game went on, it started to get more and more coverage. And to be fair to Five Live, well, they went to it quite a lot, and it ended up more or less dominating their afternoon's coverage, even though they were commentating live on other games.
The actual tournament itself, which was in India, was really well supported as well. There was, I think, 80,000 in the stadium for the final.
For the final.
Yeah. And that wasn't just a one-off. A lot of the games leading up to it were really well attended as well. A couple of the Brazil games got up to 60,000 as well. So
goodness.
It was, it obviously captured the imagination of the locals in a country that isn't associated with any sort of football background.
No, the Indian... it's not called, obviously, the Indian Premier League because that's the IPL, which is the cricket thing.
Mm.
I forget the name of the Indian League that's only two or three seasons old now.
Yeah.
It's actually due to come up. It starts in November. It's only lasts about 3 months.
Was that the one that Robbie Fowler was associated
with?
Yeah,
I believe so. And David James managed one of the teams. Peter Reid managed a team as well.
Mm.
This is in the inaugural season. I'm afraid I've not been keeping across it. But they've got some seriously old dudes to come over to play. But in fairness, alongside the majority of players that were from India. So clearly there's also an attempt to try and get the Indian players playing competitive football. Mm. I don't know whether or not it's a success or not, but I understand that the attendances are quite decent. Again, it's not really my area, but I understand they're quite decent. And I'm sure the organisers of this tournament probably did do some very good work getting the schools out, getting the kids into some of the games for free. Nevertheless, people still have to turn up for the tournament. They have to want to be there. And there's no arguing, as you say, Graham, with the enthusiasm of the crowd.
Mm.
And it's nice to see, because there's no reason why they shouldn't like football in India.
Yeah.
You know, they just have to watch it, just to put it on, really, and they will embrace it. And I'm sure that there's plenty of Manchester United fans in India. There are plenty of Manchester United fans everywhere, let's face it. So.
But as Jan says, the main thing that has occupied a lot of column inches about this World Cup win at underage level is what are the prospects for the players when competition for places in the Premier League is so tough.
Yeah.
And realistically, most players won't be expecting to break into a side until they're in their early 20s. There are a few outliers.
No.
I mean, obviously...
Well, Jadon Sancho's already played for Dortmund. We mentioned he is the new Dortmund player that I now have to mention every week. After the last Dortmund player who I will never speak the name of again. Ever. But Sancho, disappointing that Sancho didn't stick around for England and actually win the World Cup at the 17 level. And he came back. I mean, he played a few minutes at Frankfurt last week, and he didn't play. He played in the under-23s this week.
And
that's a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah, while England were off winning the World Cup.
Mm.
And I think that's disappointing. Obviously, I'm a big Dortmund guy, so I have to believe that they're acting in the player's best interest. But, you know, I think if it was a different club, I'd probably be a little bit more bit irked with them, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Sancho's absence was great news for Ryan Brewster. He scored loads of goals. Yeah. He scored
8 or 9, didn't he? In the whole tournament.
Yeah, he got two hat tricks. He got a hat trick in the quarterfinal and a hat trick in the semi final. Scored one in the final as well.
Plenty of talent there, isn't
Plenty
there?
Plenty of talent there. 17 years old. He doesn't need to break into a side for another 3 years. But
no.
He's still got development to do. But, you know, if he can break into a side, all the better, I suppose.
I'd quite like to see some stats, and maybe I might at some point sit down and try and collate them myself, about the average age of debutants, say, in the Premier League as opposed to the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, my impression is that the Bundesliga start them considerably younger than they do. That you're looking at 19, 20 in the Premier League, and maybe 18, 19, which is not considerably younger, but in relative terms, to in the Bundesliga. I think the fact that, all right, Sancho is young to be making his debut, but not unheard of.
Mm.
If he's a success at Dortmund, you know, he could get to 20 years old and be well over, well into his treble figures, you know, yeah. as a Dortmund player. It's not completely out of the question.
Mm.
And my impression is that that doesn't happen. They have to wait a little longer. And that might need to change in England. I think that we might want to try and see. But if they're good enough,
yeah.
I'm of the view that if they're good enough that they will get played. I don't think they're getting blocked.
Yeah.
I just think it's probably more that the bar is set very high in England.
Yeah.
Competition is very fierce. And yes, they are competing with very, very good players from all over the world.
Mm.
But the fact that they are from all over the world isn't stopping them from playing. I think it's just that they're probably not quite up to scratch. I wouldn't mind betting that this bunch of youngsters will get their chances, either at their parent clubs, or some of them might say, or might do what Sancho did and said, look, I'm not going to get a sniff here.
Yeah.
I'm off.
Yeah.
And if Sancho can make it work, then others will go, you know what? Yeah, let's take a chance. Let's go to Spain, maybe.
Mm.
I mean, they're that good that they would yeah. be able to get picked up by clubs in Spain and Italy and in Germany. I'm certain of it. Ryan Kent, who's just a little bit older, but he's gone to Freiburg because he's just not getting the chances at Liverpool, probably didn't fancy the idea of going to a championship club. The championship is a problematic league, I think, for young players because it's very physical and there isn't that much encouragement of technique because it's just so many fixtures. All they do is play football. Sounds yeah. daft. But they don't work, they're not coached, they don't work mm-hmm. on the technique, they can't be improved.
To the next game.
They're just yeah. constant slog. They're playing twice a week. It's ridiculous.
Mm. Mm.
And I think that if you were Ryan Kent's decided to go out and play once a week for Freiburg, possibly for a relegated side, but nevertheless he'll get stacks and does get stacks of experience. Yesterday, Freiburg got a player sent off and Ryan Kent came on as a sub. He's a striker. And he was leading the line for a 10-man Freiburg team. They lost the game. And he didn't score. But bloody hell, he learned an awful lot about how to play football in that time that he was on there. Really, you know, that's a combination of training and coaching and then really good game experience. And he's getting that right balance.
Do you think that Oliver Burke learnt a lot in his time in Germany?
No, it's well known that Oliver Burke learnt nothing.
Mm.
Are you aware of Oliver Burke's nickname at Leipzig?
No.
Tell us.
The blank hard drive.
The blank hard drive?
Yeah.
Right,
there's
okay.
nothing on it.
That's cutting.
Yeah, I mean, it's very harsh. The lad's injured as well. And I mean, he's gone to West Brom and he's injured. So he's obviously had a big career setback.
Mm.
And that's disappointing because, I mean, he's clearly a talented boy.
Mm.
And I'm sure there's a way back for him. But, yeah, I mean, he may need to work on his technique and he might need to try and see if he can get some tactical nous.
But yeah.
Some people's brains just aren't wired that way. And it's tough.
But he's one, and he's one player as well. It's be bad to say,
yes.
be wrong to say that all players are going to suffer the same fate,
yeah.
and go abroad young and struggle.
At the moment we've got such a small sample of young players who are going over, to the Bundesliga especially. I mean,
yeah.
that's what we've got probably more knowledge of than other leagues. But there does seem to be opportunities there, and there does seem to be a desire for younger
yeah.
players to go out there and explore that, which is a good thing, which is a really good thing. I wonder as well if it's to do with the fact that kids who are into football now are growing up with a much more international focus. They surrounded themselves growing up
yeah.
with immense knowledge of everything that's going on there. 10 years of YouTube videos
yeah.
of any player you care to name.
Yeah.
And these kids are hunting it down, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I'm just in my own experience with my son. I mean, he's constantly telling me about players that play in other divisions and not for the top clubs either.
Yeah,
he's just mentioning these players, like correcting me in my pronunciation. I'm just going, how on earth do you know this? I mean, when I was his age, I was I was a bit of a stato, but only for the English leagues.
Yeah.
I didn't really know much, and probably the Scottish leagues. Then that was kind of abroad for me, even though it was like 30 miles up the road for me. So yeah, there's a lot of that. I was actually just thinking as you were coming to that question that whether any of these younger players that won the World Cup recently, whether they're actually part of their own education, not just their footballing, well, maybe part of their footballing education, whether they're actually including languages in what they're doing.
Yeah.
Because one of the barriers for any Brit is going abroad is that there's never an incentive to learn the language. But for anybody starting out in football now must be thinking, or should be thinking, if I'm going to make it to the highest level, I've got to be able to, well, one, communicate with people who may not be speaking English as their first language or may not even speak it at all. And especially if I'm going abroad, then I really need to be able to take direction and learn from some people. So I think that if I was, 14, 15 years old, I was signed for a club, when I'd be finishing my training, I'd be, going off and learning a bit of German, a bit of Spanish, whatever, to get myself on. It's going to be as important for them as any skill that they're going to learn on the pitch.
Mm. Yeah.
I wonder how much English is now a lingua franca, basically, in coaching terms, because for larger clubs, you're going to have players coming from all over the world.
Mm.
And especially in countries like Germany, where English is a business language. And it is used quite extensively there. German coaches coming over here, and they're pretty much, well, German players come over here, and they're pretty much fluent in English before they come over.
English is, as you say, the lingua franca. It is a language of commerce increasingly, very much on the planet. Going back to Ryan Kent, his situation is that Christian Streich is his coach at Freiburg, and Christian Streich doesn't speak to him in English. Christian Streich's English is not very good. Right. He doesn't speak English, and Ryan just has to deal. That's what he's doing. So, really throwing him into the deep end, which for English player is quite something. It's quite laudable, and it's not something that happens. It happens an awful lot with other. I mean, if you come from Argentina or like Leo Messi, I mean, I realise that obviously he was a prodigy right from the off. So perhaps he's not the best example, but it is an example of how young kids from certain parts of the world. Where they're not likely to get on, have to move thousands of miles at a very young age to a brand new place, embrace the culture, learn to play football, do all of this at the same time. I mean, English lads, which historically, it's just not something that they would do. And you do have to wonder to what extent there's an appetite for that. I would imagine that for a lot of those youngsters, their first choice would be to stay in England in the Premier League. Yeah. Well, one, because it's home, but also because it's the Premier League and it pays lots of money and it's a competitive league and you'll do interesting things there. If you play the cards right, you're playing the Champions League and you'll win titles, win trophies. Mm-hmm. So it's squaring it off. But I think is worth perhaps bringing up is the tactical knowledge of players in Spain and in Germany, for example. By comparison, it is said to English players, is the amount of time that players spend learning about tactics and being tactically aware while they're playing football. And then when a coach draws them a diagram, say, I want you to be here, they do this, do that, but they understand what he's saying, rather than English players looking at them and going, go run about a bit.
Yeah. Big diags.
Yeah, big diags.
Chuck
and float up. Winners in the air. That kind of thing. There was a really interesting quote. I don't know where it came from because it was tweeted, but from Bradley Wright Phillips, who is the son of Ian Wright.
Yeah.
Had a not entirely distinguished career in England before moving to New York Red Bulls, moving to New Jersey, where he has enjoyed a distinguished career in MLS. Scored lots and lots of goals. And this was in the context of promotion and relegation, the big debate in America about promotion and relegation, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. And he said that in his experience in England, the coaching that he got was all based upon just playing games, winning matches, and trying to get themselves in or out of the situation that they were in. So either to get themselves promoted or get themselves or keep themselves from being relegated. And that in MLS, in America, because they have no relegation, there is much more time spent learning about playing the game, learning about tactics. And he says that he had learned in a very short space of time more than he'd ever learned about football in the years that he'd been playing at the numerous clubs in England that he'd been playing.
Wow, that says a lot, doesn't it?
Which is really interesting. Bradley Wright Phillips is at a stage in his career where I think he's entitled to articulate these views because he's played a lot of football. And I thought that was a really interesting thing to say. It's a good, interesting from the context of the advantages and disadvantages of promotion and relegation, but it's also interesting in the context of the discussion that we're having as well about English players and getting on.
Mm. Yes.
Yes.
Sure, I can't add anything else to that. It was really good.
Was my blistering take too blistering?
I was blown away. I was actually sitting here just listening.
You're thinking, Terry won't have anything to say. It's his birthday. His brain's been switched up. He's been in the Isle of Wight all weekend.
He's been in the Isle of Wight. He's been formulating hot takes.
Football is going to go. What's football then?
That was really interesting. Where did you hear that quote?
It was on Twitter. Richard Whittle tweeted it. But I don't know. Unfortunately, he didn't tweet from where it came from. But it was something that he said, presumably in a fairly recent interview.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see if he makes a break into coaching now.
Won't it just? Yeah.
See what he comes back.
Yeah,
with.
I mean, I wonder whether or not he might be persuaded to try and just stay to stay in New York or New Jersey. I don't know where he is, but maybe join the team there because he's been there for a while now.
Yes, he has.
So he's pretty much part of the furniture, and it might take a bit to persuade him to come back. But I think it's really interesting. It does lead into all kinds of debates about promotion and relegation over here and stuff like that. One day I'd love us to have a conversation where we upset people by arguing that we should get rid of relegation in the Premier League, but not today.
Do you think that our success at underage level will give people more interested in the Premier League 2, the under-23 Premier League? Or not? I mean, this is where a lot of these heroes, our World Cup winning heroes at underage level, are destined to see most action, isn't it? At the moment, anyway.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of other kids out there as well.
Yes, of course. Yeah, that highly enjoys some limited television coverage, isn't it? Premier League too.
It's part of the deal, isn't it?
Yeah. I do know that BT and Sky both have shown a couple of those games. I'm not certain that we're quite ready to make that leap as a nation.
Doesn't get you excited, does it?
No, and I think that, to be fair, the number of people that probably watched England win the World Cup at underage level, which is still brilliant. We should stop saying that. 35 minutes into the podcast, it's still brilliant.
We won the World Cup.
But I don't think that many people really watched that. And they certainly wouldn't have watched the rounds before.
Yeah.
And so will it inspire them to watch Premier League 2? Probably not.
Yeah. I can't imagine that no matter what success we've had this season, I can't imagine that Eurosport are going to have too many competitors for the next tournament that comes up.
No.
Because this one was pretty much almost exclusively on Eurosport.
Yeah.
And this is after a whole summer where we've been winning stuff.
Yeah.
It's great that all the this attention has been focused on it, but I can't help feel that some of that attention is really just big it up just so that they can stick a knife in somewhere.
But one of the possibilities of our young players making it into the senior squad will be the accountability from the fans. If fans engage in youth football at all levels, and not just in terms of playing and coaching, but if they actually turn up and watch the games, it puts pressure on clubs and on the FA to actually do something with these kids and bring them through. If 15,000 people turn up to watch Chelsea under-23s play, Premier League 2 team, but then the club will look at that and go, there's an expectation from fans to see these lads actually push up. So we have to manage that somehow, which does, in fairness, puts an extra dimension of pressure on the first team coach to think, you're telling me now I have to definitely include some of these guys in here. But, I mean, that's probably a better way of doing it than imposing something on them by a rule and saying you must play five lads from the under-23s or else. You know, I mean, that you wouldn't want that to happen. I mean, that's perhaps a more organic and perhaps a more natural way of doing it. And I think if they could make youth football a more attractive option for spectators, make it cheap, subsidise it maybe, get people in. I mean, if Palace kids were playing at Selhurst Park, for example, for, I don't know, a tenner to get in of a Tuesday evening, I'd certainly be minded to go along and follow them because I don't get to watch the first team for various reasons. So, I mean, it would be my way of showing my support for the club. I think that there's definitely options there to look at the Premier League 2 and just generally speaking the youth setup and look at it like try and maybe follow along the lines of minor league baseball, you know, the AAA baseball there, which is not necessarily youth league, but it can be. And there's a whole strata going on there with, you know, relatively well supported minor league clubs playing inferior baseball, but still, you know, of a decent standard, and it's supposed to be an enjoyable day out. So, I mean, this is something that I think that could be worked on, and I think it would be to the benefit of English football in the longer term.
Hmm. One of the bonuses I think we've actually seen out of this World Cup win at underage level is the fact that this was a good England performance, playing a good English style of game, and just all the players really looking like they've been brought through together. And even when players are missing, other players come and slot in, and it looks like a well-oiled machine. It looks like something. Watching the under-17s play, the under-20s play especially, and the under-19s this summer, they all look on it. They look amazing. The under-21s, not so much. The under-21s had all the same problems you see that England have got at a major tournament. They looked disjointed. They looked less than the sum of their parts. Because I got excited when the under-21s came along, and I thought, yeah, great, I'm going to watch this. And then I thought, oh, this is a bit stinky. Yeah, we're going to go out really soon.
This is England, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, they went out relatively well. You know, they
the semi-finals, they did
reasonably
decent,
well.
But,
yes,
yeah,
but yeah. It was a small tournament, they didn't play that well. Yeah. They not like these other sides. These other sides got through to the finals and won stuff because they were brilliant and they were far better than anyone else. That England under-21 side was not better than.
So what do you think is that? Do you think that is because the latest batch, the under-20s, under-17s, are all being coached better as a unit? Or do you think that it's because the under-21s are now playing for their clubs and it's completely stinking them up?
I think it's more of the latter, I think. But I think the thing is as well, that under-21s is a bit of an outlier as well because of the way that the tournaments are split up. That under-21 side was actually an under-23 side. There were players who were 23, 24 in there.
Yeah.
Because of the way that it split up. We had a couple of full England internationals playing there. They've only had one or two caps, but they were players that were perhaps on the who had made the break in their first team and now were actually on the fringes. But there was individual talent. There was in you know, a lot of individually talented players there, but not as cohesive as these other teams were.
I think it's a little from column A and a little from column B.
Yeah, I think so.
I think this current batch of players, if they're given the, assuming that they can find homes and play regular football, there's no reason why they can't go up to under-21 level, or the under-17s case up to under-20, and then the under-20s going into the under-21s, and then being developed together as a unit, assuming, of course, that they continue to develop their club careers, then they should do that, and then we would see the benefits.
Mm.
And we see that with Belgium, and we've seen that with a succession of Holland generations of Holland players who have played each other since they were 10 years old, you know, with each other. And they've obviously, you know, they've reached a point where they become men and they go off and they form their own careers, but they still manage to come back and play in an international side. Of course, that dynasty is just completely broken down now, but. You know, it does work.
That's always no reason. Great examples. That would let you down.
I mean, it's then. Well, the Belgium is the generation there, golden generation. Is a great example of that at the moment. And it could be that we are looking at this. We're looking at we've got a couple of generations of young players, a golden generation of young players coming through. If they can just keep their club careers on track, then they'll just reassemble, play, and they'll play like they'll know each other. And there's no reason why they can't go into the senior team relatively intact and really, or certainly make up the nucleus of a good England squad and do something genuinely interesting. But so much can go wrong in that time.
If they are going to do that, I'm not sure how often the younger national sides get together. The senior side gets together for the odd friendly and, you know, the international qualifications and things like that. But if they're going to really make a go of it, I mean, they're going to have a lot of time playing with their clubs, probably not seeing their colleagues in the national team. I really think that there needs to be an effort to get them together a lot more often.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, because it's going to be like 4 months or 3 months apart, it's going to be a problem.
They have the benefit of having played together and being trained. They've gone through a full, if you like, pre-tournament with them. But there's no reason why that won't necessarily benefit. If the England squad of the 5 or 6 years time, the senior England squad is made up of our current under-17s and our current under-20s, they will be used to this kind of football. They'll be used to going away. They'll be used to working abroad.
Yeah.
They'll be used to playing in these tournaments, and they'll be familiar with the FA and comfortable in the FA setup, which gives them a really, really good chance, because so much of this is down to the preparation, isn't it? That those few weeks before a tournament comes along. And if you stuff that up, and we always stuff that up, then you know you haven't got a chance. It doesn't matter how good you are. And England aren't that good. But these are the things here. So these are the structural issues around supporting these lads. It's not just about them being, you know, making it in their clubs. It's also about the FA, you know, supporting them as they become full-grown adult football players with all of the issues that come with being full-grown adult football players and coping with all of that.
I must point out to international listeners that this conversation does not mean in any way that we think that England have any chance at the next World Cup. We are not going to make it 3 of 3. We're not going to win a World Cup. Yeah, exactly. Just the World Cup without any caveats.
Without any caveats, yeah. No disclaimer, a non-disclaimer World Cup.
Yes. Jan, are we going to win the World Cup next year?
No.
Terry, are we going to win the World Cup next year?
No.
Yeah. So there you go. This is something, it's not even the next one. It is the one after that, wherever that is.
If we're going to win a World Cup with this bunch of lads, it's going to be, hasn't been determined yet.
I think
it's going to be held.
You made a very interesting point earlier about Messi, about players like him. And we look at players like Rooney and Owen. And yes, they did break into their side when they were 16, 17.
Mm.
But these were prodigies. And they were people that broke the mould. Other players took time to break into the side. I mean, a lot of players that did get success early, people like Beckham, Gerrard, they did mature into their roles very, very, very quickly. But what we have with these underage sides are not prodigies, because they would be in their teams right now.
Mm.
But they are just good intelligent players.
Yes.
And they will mature, and they will mature through the ranks. What I think that should be concentrating on right now is that these under-17s, their next objective maybe isn't getting into a Premier League side or a Champions League side. Why can't their objective be win the under-20 World Cup? Go through that way. And then for the under-20s, I'd say, yes, now it's time for you to shine. Now it's time for you to
go absolutely. The under-20s, you're right. That is absolutely right.
Well, then, I think we've battered that one into shape, haven't we?
Certainly beat that particular topic into submission.
Yeah, we've certainly used some continental coaching methods on that one. right, well, my turn to do the box set this weekend. And a bumper box set it is as well. There's lots and lots of Premier League action on Sunday. But it's FA Cup first round on Friday night. The BBC Two are showing Hyde United versus MK Dons. And on the Saturday, the lunchtime kickoff is going to be Shaw Lane versus Mansfield Town.
Shaw Lane versus Mansfield Town. Shaw Lane does sound like a soap opera, doesn't it?
It's you would be forgiven, even if you think you know a bit about non-league football, if you've never heard of Shaw Lane.
I've never heard of Shaw Lane.
They've only been in existence for 5 years, so and they're on a meteoric rise.
Lucky sods.
Yeah, so they...
Who's bankrolling them?
They were called Shaw Lane Aquaforce up until last year, until they got to a level where the FA said, actually, you can't have the name of a sponsor.
So the good people of Aquaforce, perhaps, have got something to do with this thing.
So, and there's Borussia Dortmund versus Bayern Munich.
What level do they play at?
And there's also the Derby de Lanterna as well.
Holy moly.
Yeah, so that'll be quite fun.
You've been to that one, haven't you?
I have, yeah. So that'll be a bit of fireworks on firework night.
Italian football is good, isn't it?
It's not bad, is it?
Yeah. Italian football is good.
It's a bit exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, obviously Juve, Napoli, and Inter, Spalletti's good.
Yeah,
but I've been watching Atalanta.
Yeah, of course,
really enjoying it because they are the hipster show. Well, I have designated them as this season's hipster's choice, and I believe that
I believe
that's canon when I say something's
hipster. I think Benevento have got to be the hipster's choice now, haven't they? They've lost all of their games so far. So they're
that's pretty authentic.
They are nailed on at the moment. they really are like hammered to the bottom of the table. So yes, Serie A.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'm not sure if you're going to see a lot of Benevento Calcio on the telly, but if they do come up in the next few weeks, I'm sure Terry and I will cover
them
in the box set. And if you want to read that preview, just get along to tinyletter.com/soundoffootball for our free newsletter. But that's all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry Bilton, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
At underage level.